guys, welcome to Not Another Anxiety Show. I'm your host, Kelly Walker, and joining me today is my co-host from thebabybroad.com, Erica Latham. Hey, Erica.
What up, mama?
So last week, what was it, maybe like two episodes ago now, we talked about sharing our anxiety story, or really any hard story, with others. And today, this was actually your beautiful bright idea. We're going to talk about how to hear someone else's story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's
Yeah, because one, we want to be heard, especially in our little anxiety stories.
Yeah.
And sometimes with our anxiety, we don't know how to really listen. Or at least I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's value in acknowledging how hard it can be to hear someone else's story that we just can't relate to, you know, because it helps us. If we know how to hear someone else's story, it helps us to not take it so personally when someone else is having trouble hearing our story, right? Like, if I know for me,
sure,
to remember, like, you know, certain family members, friends or whatever, if they were going through a hard time and I just didn't get it, remembering that there are times in life where I just didn't get it, and it didn't mean that I didn't love my friends and family and didn't want to support them. I just didn't get it. That helped me. Like, if, you know, there were very few times Andy understood my anxiety story, it didn't mean he wasn't a great support, but there were a lot of times he wasn't able to say me too, or really understand where I was coming from. But it doesn't mean we can't be good listeners. And again, if we kind of know just part of life is not always getting everybody's story, then it allows us to not feel like such an outcast if we share ours and someone's kind of like, you know, I don't quite understand, but I want to.
Yeah. Oh, the want to is really important. My dad is like a part-time songwriter, and I just remembered he wrote a song called The Want To. I'm going to have to go
Can
find
you,
it.
Can you sing us a verse? Or?
And not even a little. Yeah, I will never do that as long as I live. But that is important. I think, if somebody says I don't really get it, but I would really like to, that's such a weight off of me if I'm trying to explain something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think we have to necessarily really get it to be a good friend, partner, family member, but a willingness to hear the other person is what really matters in relationships. Like, as much value as there is when someone else can say, oh my God, me too, that doesn't always happen. You know, that doesn't always happen. Not everyone will be able to say, oh God, me too. Like, I get that.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like I was kind of saying, Andy rarely was able to like say, me too. Me too. I used to love, it was almost like perverse. If he was like, you know, I was kind of anxious today, I was like, ooh, tell me about it. Like, you know, like, how did it feel? You know, like a real creeper about it. But, you know, even though he was rarely able to say me too, he was able to say, you know, can you explain that to me? Or can you share more about that? And really he was my best support person, even though he didn't quite get it.
That's the whole thing. I'm a huge fan of the phrase, if it's important to you, it's important to me.
Oh, I like that.
In anything. In anything. But especially when it comes down to the same sentiment, when it comes down to this kind of like sharing your story stuff, I don't have to get it. I don't have to get why you're friends with that person. I don't have to get why you're doing that job. I don't have to necessarily understand your struggle, but clearly this is important to you. And because you're important to me, that thing's going to be important to me too.
Oh, I love that. I can, that's
going to be, trademark.
That's going to be my takeaway for the day, because I was just thinking about this, where sometimes I have trouble hearing someone's story. Andy will be the first to tell you, we both kind of approach life a little bit differently. I experience it like kind of emotionally, and he experiences it like through logical thought with not a whole lot of emotion. So the things he shares with me, I actually find pretty impersonal and boring at times. I'm like, why are you telling about these weird facts about, you know, Eisenhower? He's reading a book about Eisenhower right now. So I get blessed with a lot of really fun facts.
Eisenhower?
Yeah. Yeah.
A book about the general/president.
Yeah. Apparently he was called Ike. I'm trying to think of some other fun things.
I learned that. They did, they printed, is this maybe, I think it's the same guy, where a newspaper jumped the gun and said that he hadn't been elected president, and they printed out, you know, several hundred copies of this newspaper. And I think it's a picture of him holding the newspaper, said that he lost the presidential election, but He was actually the president. I'm pretty sure that was him.
I'll have to ask Andy as he gets further along in his book. I'm sure he'll be able to share those fun facts with me. But
let me know.
He is like the king of, you know, when he gets interested, he'll be the first to tell you. I'm not blowing up a spot or anything. When he's interested in something, he's like interested. It's all you kind of hear about. And sometimes I'm not the best listener. And the funny thing is, I expect him to be an amazing listener to me. At all times, everything I have to say is golden. So you better.
It's gold.
It's gold, you know. And
I read this thing about neuroplasticity, and nobody else cares but us.
Yeah. I know. So this is really applicable because I kind of realized even those small moments where I'm like, God, why is he interested in this? This is so boring. It's like, wow, I am not being a grade A listener right here. And just because I don't find it interesting doesn't mean. He doesn't, or that I can't, you know, find a way to kind of listen up and get value from it and not be thinking in my head, shut up.
You're going to get from the Eisenhower book. Wasn't there a scene, you watch The Big Bang Theory. I don't because I don't believe in making fun of autism, but, isn't there a scene where who's the one Sheldon mm-hmm. and he's dating Blossom?
Amy Fowler. Well, yeah, she plays, that's the character's name, and that's Blossom. That's the actress.
Yeah,
you got it.
And he's going on and on and on about PlayStation versus Xbox, and she's like, wanting to end it all. Somehow he's like, can you just engage with this? And she's like, clearly being sarcastic, like, you're kidding me. Oh my God, that's so amazing. It's just like a good scene. She obviously doesn't care, but, you know, she cares that he cares.
Yeah, exactly. And so we don't always have to get it to be kind of a good support person. And one thing that helps me be a better listener, maybe you can share some of your insights too, but something that helps me is remembering to show up as a blank slate. So acknowledging that I may carry my own preconceived notions about someone's situation or challenge or whatever, but also letting go of my ego just enough to say, you know what? Maybe there's something I don't get about this, you know, like maybe there's something I don't understand here.
I'm so bad at this. I think on paper, I'm like a really good listener. And I certainly am when it comes to this world, when it's, you know, somebody struggling with something and I love it when people struggle because it makes me feel better because I'm a terrible person. But, like I understand anxiety. I don't understand depression.
Sure.
Necessarily. I didn't think I did. And I think like what you just said, I've had to get real with the people in my life that struggle with this and had to look them in the face and say, it turns out I don't know everything and I don't know what's best. And that's really hard.
It is hard.
Because I want to be the expert in my field, you know, with everything.
Yeah. It is really hard. I can relate. Same with, you know, there's a lot of like addiction in my family and I have not been the most gracious listener at all in the past. And to be fair, I wasn't gracious with myself with anxiety either. I think going through anxiety has allowed me to see, man, things aren't always quite the way they appear. Like it's like I used to think anxiety again was about pulling up your bootstraps, just pushing through, strength of will, like, and it turns out it's not about that at all. So maybe, just maybe, addiction's the same way. You know, I used to really think it's
totally.
Had a lot of preconceived notions like, God, it's a choice. It's a weakness. It's a lot of preconceived notions. And, you know, I understand it quite a bit better showing up with a blank slate, but it's still something I can't quite say me too, but I'm a more gracious listener. I kind of acknowledge, you know, if someone's talking to me, I'm like, you know, I don't quite understand, but I'm here to listen. And if you want to share a little bit more, I wish I knew exactly what to offer other than I'm just here to help you through this kind of, to sit with you through a tough emotion.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to things like that, you know, I think addiction's a really good example. If somebody comes to you and says, you know, hey, I'm struggling with something or whatever it is. But I think looking them in the face and not trying to fix it.
Yeah.
I think we do a lot of, I know better than you. I have an answer for something.
It's so obvious, right? Like it feels so obvious to us, the ones that aren't in it.
Right. And then because we're thinking all those things, we like by definition can't actually listen.
Exactly. If we're caught in our thinking, there's no space for listening. Right. It takes up a lot of space being in our...
It's really hard. This is like really hard. I'm not a bad listener. It's just really hard. Like, challenging. I have to really concentrate on, okay, you know, what are the words they're saying? And I think we were taught, you know, even in high school or who knows, younger, active listening and nodding your head and sitting forward with an open posture and echoing statements. And it's not all about that. Sometimes it's looking at somebody going like, oh God, yeah, I don't quite get this, but I'm going to give it the old college try. And can you explain that again? Or yeah, asking real questions. I mean, people, you don't have to beat around the bush with a lot of this stuff. You know, you can say, I don't get it. And if this question is tough or offensive or whatever, I don't mean it. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding every aspect of what you're trying to say.
Yeah. And something you said there, how like sometimes frustration arises, right? Because we think we go into fixing mode. I think something for me that's been helpful is like, being like in our conversation, like just, you know, when we're conversing with someone else, just being a little bit mindful of our own feelings, like, and this can be kind of tough because we are trying to engage in active listening, but we just want to have a little bit of awareness of our own feelings, because we may notice emotions like frustration arising, especially because a lot of us go into hard conversations with the intention of fixing, like you said, not listening, but like fixing, saving, solving, because, you know, that's, as a species, we're really good at problem solving and tinkering and finagling. Right. So we
just want it to be better. We just want whatever it is to be better.
Yeah. Trying to make it better.
I think know your audience, you know, first of all, I would like to think that these kinds of conversations are probably harder conversations because the person that you're engaging with is someone you value.
Yeah.
You know, not always. Sometimes you have to listen to, I mean, you and I both listen to people's stories and they're not people we know necessarily on a personal level, but a lot of times they are. It's when conversations get sticky and you have to remind yourself of skills on how to listen to somebody, it's usually because that person's close to us and things hit a nerve.
Yeah.
And when we're that close to somebody, we want them to be easy. We want them to be, cured of whatever, because pouring our energies into both in helping profession. So, you know, we're pouring our energies into other people. So I think going in with that sort of open attitude and I'm not here to fix you and, you know, I don't know everything. It's really, really tough. And I think because if you are in that dynamic where you're that close to somebody, I personally, and I don't know if this is across the board, but I don't see a problem with being honest, but respectful about my feelings.
Yeah.
And saying, this feels a little overwhelming because I care about you. And I want to make sure that I understand and get my, you know, emotions in check so I can really be there. Yeah. So I think if you kind of like nod to, I'm feeling a little bewildered about this, or I'm feeling a little surprised, or I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. Don't make it about you, but I think if things kind of get out of, you know, I don't think there's an issue with saying where you are too at some point in the process.
No, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. I think that's important too. We don't want to like just shove our feelings away or kind of suppress our experience either, because it's, you know, relationships are two ways. Yeah. Two ways, and that's important. And I think really just being aware and mindful is the most difficult part, because so often we'll feel frustrated or overwhelmed and we'll get in reactive mode. So we'll, like, sometimes with my sisters, you know, like I'll go straight into fixing mode and you got to do this and that, right? Like, which is exactly exactly what you don't do as a coach, but as a sister, I'll tell you what.
That's different.
Like as a coach, it's, you learn all really wonderful skills for active listening and really hearing. But when it comes to that family, and I know that I just, from enough kind of practice of awareness and mindfulness, I know that rush, that kind of urge to just tell them how it is, tell them what they got to do. And that's my cue. I'm like, oh, God, this sucks. All right, fine. This sucks. Deep breath. Like, I just want to, like, it's so clear that you obviously stopped dating that guy and don't text that person. But, okay, let's just be here. It's so hard. But once we kind of remember, hey, you don't have to do anything, it actually takes a lot of the pressure off. So it gets easier to listen.
Well, it's hard to do that because so let's start with the the perspective as anxious people. Yeah. Most of us, one, clearly we're perfect. But a lot of us are rigid.
Yeah.
We have
habits of rigidity. That is true. That's we tend to.
I think it can be a huge weight off when you look at somebody who's going through a struggle, even if you just want to slap them right across their beautiful face and say, wow, all you have to do is this one thing. But if you just look at them and go, wow, that must be tough.
Yeah.
Wow. It seems like you're really, this must be really heavy for you, or this must be, there's some tag words we can like talk about, you know, and sort of acknowledging it without downplaying it, without saying, I told you so. But what's awesome for you as an anxious person is that it really isn't your responsibility. Anything that happens outside of you, even if it's your spouse, at some point you can articulate to them, your behavior is frustrating and it affects me and I need a little bit more. But at the end of the day, their behavior is their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that can be really hard to like look at yourself in the mirror and say, yikes, my sister who struggles with blah, blah, blah. Everything feels very personal. I mean, this is part of the anxiety world.
Yeah.
Everything feels very personal. Everything's directed at you. This doesn't fit within my little schema, you know? And
yes.
I think taking that step back and going, wow, that must be hard for you.
Yeah.
Let's use Andy and Ike as an example. You know, that must be really,
it's really, whatever. That must be really like interesting. I mean, that's what it is for him. I'm like that. You know, that sounds really exciting for you, you know, like it's a hard, and that's not even, I mean, that's a pretty benign conversation, right? Like it's just a different interest. He's just trying to tell his story and it may not be a challenging story, but he's just trying to share his experience, you know, his story. And,
right.
And that's not even him going through a challenge. To be honest, it's a little bit easier when he is going through a challenge. I have so much more natural empathy, you know, when it's something like this, I'm like, oh my God, who cares? You know, so
I know.
And I'm like, oh God, you know, according to Erica, if it's important to you, it's important to me. So I guess I care. I care now indirectly.
I recently had an interesting conversation with one of my best friends here, and we had sort of a funk in a way, you know, and this is, you know, one of the most, not just best friends, but most important people in my day.
Yeah.
And we sort of ended up looking at each other as we're like resolving this, going, this was so much easier when we were both in crisis.
Yeah.
Because at least then we had like almost scripted things to say, like, I am actively listening now. And, you know, it's almost easier when somebody's a hot mess. Cause then like we all do, like all anxious people, we know what to do in an emergency, but when things
people
are
being vulnerable, we're social creatures. Like if someone's being vulnerable, right. Our instinct is like, oh, hey, it's okay. Right. Like it's a lot easier to be kind and nice and patient and this is where I swear Brené Brown's research comes in really handy, is because vulnerability is the birthplace of connection. We are social creatures. Like if someone's being vulnerable, especially someone we love, and there's no like attack, they're not attacking us, they're just being straight up vulnerable, like our reaction is, you know, to be kind. It's almost easier if someone's kind of struggling or being really vulnerable, you know.
Well, let me give you the Irish perspective real quick.
Sure.
I believe all that to be true from the depths of my soul. I also know that sometimes seeing someone go through something that we truly don't understand, not necessarily, like if you see someone crying at a funeral, or you see someone where your experience can kind of line up with them, even if you don't, like, even if it's unsavory, you've sort of been there and you can sift through some empathy, and I don't want to, we've talked about telling our stories and why and how and whatever, and I don't want to discourage people from doing that. I will say that I had to learn how to get people's attention, and I had to learn how to find people that could hear me.
Yeah.
Because what I
how to tell it in the right way too, right? Like I know when my sister's really, really whiny, it's like I don't have a lot of compassion in my heart. Well, you know?
That's all that. But what I found was in telling my story, and we talked about this last time, that there were several people in my life that, I mean, would barely look me in the eye what I've now learned is they either something struck a chord with them.
Yeah. Either it's a mirror or
or it's too much because they have told themselves they are not allowed to be vulnerable.
Or that therefore, can't happen, right? Like that
can't happen. Or I have nothing to say. You're scared. You're scary. Your thing is scary. Addiction's a lot like this too, where your thing is scary and doing heroin must be contagious. It's like, well, you know, and I felt that too. I have a friend who got into drugs, and when she told me, I kind of balked. I was like, well, you're one of those people that do heroin. Like I almost didn't want her to touch me. It was very strange, you know?
Yeah. I can imagine that. Yeah.
So I think as people who are trying to hear a story, if you really want to be a person that wants to listen to someone else's story, or if you're listening to this episode and you feel like, God, you know, my partner could really use this information, you gotta let go of those kind of preconceived notions or your own history of not accepting something that's different.
Yeah.
You know, people who come out closet with their sexuality, people who come out of the closet with gender identity, people who have, you know, secret addiction issues. These are all sort of the same heading of taboo. It falls outside of the norm and it's almost like they should be on their own little leper colony. And people that are grieving, we've talked about that, you know?
Yeah.
We don't want to look at people who are in grief because it hits too close to home, or two, we so don't understand. We so don't identify that we just can't even look at these people.
Yeah.
So I think it's taking, as a listener, I think taking a step back and saying, somebody needs to be heard and I just need to sort of do it.
Yeah.
And like dig deep into your courage and like really sit there and listen, even if you have to sing the Star Spangled Banner in your mind, you know?
It doesn't mean we have to entirely get it. It doesn't mean we have to fix them. That really takes, I know that makes all the difference for me. And that's just my personal experiences. When I remember, I don't have like a job to do here because it can feel really overwhelming if we're trying to fix someone. No one can for themselves.
Yeah, it is your job. That's the best part. But you know what the best thing you ever said to me ever? Do you know?
I don't know.
I was absolutely hysterically crying and I put you on mute like 6 times in a row. And you must have heard just like dead silence, but I'm in the car like scream crying like Ron Burgundy in like the Glass Case of Emotion.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Like, Baxterville on the bridge, you know, just like nuts town. And I kept muting you because come on. And I just remember hearing you say, knowing you now, I just know like that was probably torture for you. But what you said was, I know. Oh, that's when I carved your name in my chest.
Yeah.
That was the end. That's all I needed.
Yeah. We're usually not really looking to be fixed. You know, sometimes we're looking for reassurance and advice, but sometimes we're just looking for someone. Oftentimes we're just looking for someone to kind of be there with us in that really hard moment, to just move through us in that really hard moment. And again, you know, I could see why you'd say, you know, Jesus, a coach, it's your job to fix people. It's like, well, no, I used to have this really cheesy tagline that I don't have, but it's true. I definitely resonates, but it was just felt, you know, too cheesy and, but it was helping you to help yourself overcome anxiety. You know, it's so cheesy, but it's true.
I'm so happy that you don't say that. Where is that? Where do you
it
have
used
that?
To be? No, oh my God, I don't have that anywhere anymore.
Make t-shirts.
Starting no.
It's true. It's 100% true. As a postpartum doula / you know, I never actually doula anybody, so I need to like come to Jesus about that. But one of the things they teach us is to work yourself out of a job. You want to make people so independent and not because you've fixed them, but because you've helped them empower themselves.
And that's the role of coaching. It's not.
It's like the Mary Poppins thing. Like she just like floated away because they were fine. You know, that's a coaching deal.
That's the difference between kind of coaching and therapy. You know, like therapy is usually a long-term relationship and coaching is a bit different, you know?
My therapist after 12 weeks was like, so
are we done? Are you here?
And I've been there 3 years and every single time she's like, so see you in a month. And I'm like, no, see you in 2 weeks for no reason. I'm I just like hers. I want to like take her out for coffee, and that's so inappropriate. But you and I became friends, so I have like hope that secretly she and I are gonna,
I know,
like,
coaching's a little different than therapy though. You have to remember, coaching's like the coach and the client are on the same level and page. It's not like expert subordinate approach. It's like it's a collaboration more, so it tends to happen more. But good luck. You know, she might go out to coffee with you. I'd say ask her.
Sometimes I see her at the farmer's market, and I'm like, are we, like, here together? And she's like, no, don't speak to me. No, she doesn't do that at all. Yeah, what was I saying? No, you don't, thank God you don't have that slogan. But that's totally what you do, is, like, helping people help themselves, and it works.
Because we can't do it. We can't go through the journey. We can't fix people. I mean, as much as we'd like to think that we can, the best we can do is support.
Yeah. Everybody that is listening to this is going, yeah, but I have that daughter that has that thing, or I have that sister that has that addiction, and I'm the one that's put together, and I'm the one that holds his family together. Okay.
Oh, God, I can
logistically,
relate to that.
Logistically, you might run the finances or whatever, but when it comes to them,
their emotional well-being
and like making strides and becoming independent and productive, and you're growing. Not doing anything.
No, the best we can do is support. And it really does. It really has made all the difference for me is remembering that, especially with personal relationships, like I don't have to do anything here. And again, it's like, oh geez. Okay. Well now I'm kind of free to listen. I don't have to do anything. There's no stakes. And it just makes it a lot easier. And I think like one of the last things that I would share that's worth remembering just because of this day and age is to be fully present. Don't be going on your phone and back and forth in the conversation.
For Christ's sake. Absolutely.
It drives me crazy. Like I hate when people, like, even if we're just hanging out and having a casual conversation and then mid conversation, this is how subtly addicted I think we are to iPhones and stuff. But it's like my pet peeve when it's like, if we're hanging out, why is the phone out all the time? Like, this isn't even just during a hard story, but especially during a hard sharing or just, you know, any kind of sharing, whatever, like, just leave your phone. Leave it across the room.
It's so, I know. And there is a time and a place, but there's nothing that makes me feel devalued as a person than the constant looking at the phone, unless, you know, we're doing something together or showing me something, like, I don't need you checking base. And if it's something that's just habitual, like if you need to check a text because you knew something was coming in, or I'm waiting for this important email.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Oh yeah.
But if you're just like whipping through Facebook and Instagram because you're bored of my face. Oh my actual God. Like nothing gets me to like MSNBC homicide special faster. My like skill set of passive aggressive listening, not passive aggressive, like my active listening face, because I'm not very like, it's not a natural state for me.
Yeah.
So if I'm out with one, I try to make a point with the people that are important in my life to sit with them one-on-one, go out to brunch, go out for a drink, go out for something. I'm much better one-on-one ever. Not good. I'm good in like a big crowd because everybody thinks I'm like hysterical, especially when I have like 2 gin and tonics, but I'm terrible in like small groups. I like in and out of there because I have like a short lifespan, but one-on-one, when I get somewhere, I make sure to either put my phone away or like make it a point to show them that I'm turning it upside down. So there's no like flashing bright lights, you know? Look people in the eye, nod, and for God's sake, please stop doing the echoing, like, it sounds like you're frustrated. I know that's what people teach. I know, and I'm sure it's what you're taught in, like, coaching school. Well, it sounds to me, what I think you're saying here is, please, there's nothing more, when you're in, like, an intimate conversation.
It feels prescribed. I know, it's one thing I don't, like, it is what you're taught in coaching, but I know, I don't use it because it just didn't resonate. No, and I take, like, you know, it's like you kind of take pieces and bits from coaching training, like what really kind of works. Like, come on, it just feels inauthentic and prescribed when someone says.
We're all taught it. Like we all know, like, it sounds like to me that you want to strangle me. That must be frustrating. Yeah. I would rather have somebody just look at me. And I have one friend who is so good at this. It's obnoxious. I don't know why she has such a good skill set in this, but I like watch her when she's listening to other people because it's fascinating. She looks into their soul, number one, leans in as close as she can without being like gross, and goes,
wow. Without getting in my New England bubble. I'm from New England. Yeah, I have like a personal space bubble, like just, you know.
I don't know why she doesn't have that. She's from New Jersey, but she
That's not New England. That's why. Sorry. I'm being a New England. That is bad listening. I am being a New England snob.
Wow.
Go ahead.
You
keep
are
going.
For real.
Being a New England snob.
But she, her like tagline is like, she'll nod, look straight into your eyeballs and go, wow. And that's it. That's it. Like there's not, it's not like, wow, that must've been hard or wow, you know, whatever. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
And it's so affirming. It's like, talk to me every minute. Every time I go to the bathroom, I want you to look at me and be like,
wow.
Wow. So I started doing it and I can't tell if people think I'm like, you know, gross or being like condescending, but I feel like it works. Like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then sometimes you can slap in there like, whew, that sounds daunting, or
yeah,
God, that must have been hard, or yikes, like even telling this part of your story must have been tough. I don't quite get it, but I know, like, I can tell by you like wringing your hands and that bead of sweat on your lip, like this must have been hard to come to me about this. And okay, like, wow.
Oh, I love
that. Have to get this out. Yeah, her wow is all I need to know. When we're in like, when I'm, it's usually when I'm fighting with her because she doesn't fight back. And I'm like all like upstate New York finger in her face. I get a lot of nods. I get them like a very like compassionate, like, wow. Okay. Like,
damn, you're wow. Fine.
You and your wow.
You broke me down. It wore me down. Me.
You're right.
You're right.
And I think the only other thing I would have to say about any of this is that even if, and we all have these people in our lives, and especially as anxious people, because we know better, we, you know, or we think we know better, we want that control. We want things to be back the way they were, or we want things to just not be like in upheaval.
Yep.
We lose trust in the person that we're talking to. So if this is somebody that you have in your life intentionally and you're keeping them there, there has to be a level of trust, and you have to trust that what is in their mind is valid. Yeah. So you don't get to say, oh, you're fine. Or, well, all you have to do is stop doing that drug. Or I told you to balance your checkbook. Or you don't get to belittle them because it's their struggle. It's their mind. So there has to be some trust building there that.
And it's kindergarten. We wouldn't want that said to us either. That would feel really awful in an anxious moment.
Yeah.
Really awful.
Like I told you, what's a good anxiety. I told you that going to that party was going to be hard. You wouldn't want to be told that. Or
no.
I told you all you had to do was face your fear. Ooh.
Yep. Oh yeah. Saying something like, right. Like, or yeah, anything like, geez, yeah. What's a good one?
So,
like,
what would build trust for you? What would someone, what is something that people say to you that builds your trust in them? And usually it's something empathetic, probably compassionate, but at the very least,
not judgmental,
not threatening. So it would be the wow, or I know.
Yep.
So give that back.
Give that back. Do it. Love it. Love it. That's our episode. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and take a minute to write a review on iTunes so that we can reach and support more people. If you're looking for more resources like one-on-one coaching, courses, or have a question you'd like answered on the show, please visit notanotheranxietyshow.com. You can also get a free ebook there by subscribing to my newsletter. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourself.